accession number 18822, reel 12.
George Aitchison, reel 12.
I was at a loose end in the summer back of 1947, and somebody suggested I should go to a chap called E.P. Thompson. And he turned out to be an academic historian who was terribly, incredibly left-wing, sort of Marx, Engels, Das Kapital, and then running out of his ears, basically. He would make even Trotsky look seem like a Gauleiter. And he said he was in charge of forming British volunteers into groups of 50 and sending them at intervals of a week to Yugoslavia, where we would help to build a railway. Yeah. E.P. Thompson's brother Frank was with SOE and during the war parachuted into Bulgaria, and there he led partisans and really behaved quite bravely, and he too was a dedicated communist, but finally the Nazis got him on some railway station somewhere in Bulgaria, and he behaved with enormous dignity and said he was proud to die for communism against Nazism and so forth, and the Germans shot him on the railway station out of hand. The Bulgarians were terribly impressed and gave him the Bulgarian equivalent of a posthumous VC and renamed the railway station Frank Thompson Station. So that was E.P. Thompson's brother. And E.P. said all Yugoslav students, male and female, were going to work in batches 50 on this railway. It would be at right angles to the main line. Now, the main line runs Munich, Belgrade, Istanbul, roughly west-northwest to east-southeast. And the poorest and most backward part of Yugoslavia was Bosnia. And they would take a point about halfway between Zagreb and Belgrade and build a railway at right angles going roughly due north-south to Sarajevo. And that would help enormously. Bosnia needed transport, and it had iron ore and timber and things that would be useful to take up to the main line, and you could send down machinery and labour and so on. It would be a very useful thing. I think there had been a narrow gauge line, but it was unsatisfactory, too long, and they were building this more or less from scratch. And so I met a group of rather unprepossessing Brits on Waterloo Station, and we start our journey out. And in talking to each other, it was painfully apparent that we were incredibly ignorant. We had only one book about Yugoslavia between the 50 of us, and that was a 40-year-old Baedeker for 1907, which didn't get us very far. And we had the vague idea that the First Balkan War of 1912 was Serbia persuading Bulgaria and Macedonia to unite and fight the Turks. And the Second Balkan War of 1913, the Serbs fought the Bulgarians and Macedonians because the Serbs said they'd done most of the fighting, they'd had the heaviest casualties, and they hadn't come out as well as they'd hoped in the treaties and agreements afterwards. So,
why was this group unprepossessing?
Oh, they were nearly all of them were left-wing. There were students, academics, some workers, I think, from Coventry. Some were nearly 40 years old. Some looked as though they'd become communists because they were nobody good, very good at anything else, but it gave them a sense of importance. And they looked a fairly scruffy, unfit bunch. If you expected to arrive with 50 basically trained national servicemen, you were wrong. You were getting a fairly unprepossessing bunch, as I remember.
How did you come to know E.P. Thompson?
I was sniffing around trying to find something to do, and somebody said, why don't you go to this chap, E.P. Thompson? I had to go all the way up from Cambridge to London to do this, but I thought what they said of him I thought was worthwhile. And at the time, I was fairly left-wing, I think because on coming back from Shanghai at the age of 15, we went to Sunderland, and there'd been the Depression of 1931. Sunderland was part of a officially designated depressed area, and I saw hundreds of men, mostly skilled men, ex-shipyard workers, standing around at street corners with those shirts that should have two studs and a collar attached to it and a tie, but they were just a shirt and no studs. They were standing around hour after hour at street corners, providing it wasn't actually raining, doing nothing. They were unemployed, and that was it. I suppose once a week they drew the unemployment pay. And I had, in Shanghai, associated all Brits with successful chaps. I think I once said, stepping into a Buick or a studio Baker, one of those pre-war status cars for America, with a uniformed Sherpa and servants in white uniforms standing around. You know, successful, affluent. So I'd never seen an Englishman who was old, because before they were 60, most Brits from Shanghai returned to UK. I'd never seen anyone who was poor. If somebody failed or had a run of bad luck, the British consul sent him home DPS as a distressed British subject. So it was a shock to me to see Englishmen reduced to that. And I read a pamphlet by John Strachey called Why You Should Be a Socialist, and so for several years I was hooked on it. So I wasn't all that out of kilter with those 50 chaps on the station. But as I said now, we were terribly ignorant about Yugoslavia. I vaguely remembered something written by an excellent American poet and novelist called John Dos Passos. It was called 1919, and it described the great hall at Versailles, where everybody was standing around with their honours and awards and decorations and epaulettes and plumes and glorious uniforms, ambassadors, generals, admirals, foreign statesmen, foreign office, career people. But of course, said Dos Passos, the Great Hall at Versailles was far too big a place to make peace in. So they formed a council of 10, and they moved into a little room down by, which was last occupied by Marie Antoinette. But even the council of 10 was too big a place to make peace in. So they formed an inner council of 4, and Orlando of Italy went off in a huff and left Clemenceau, Lloyd George, and President Woodrow Wilson, 3 old men leading the pack. And the Versailles treaty lasted 7 or 8 months, and there were, for some odd reason, 1,001 peripheral small decisions to be taken. And there's an incredibly well-written list. All I remember is the last line saying, typhus, machine gun fire, arson, and the island of Yap. And but in the middle of all this was the self-determination of small nations. And Yugoslavia was created out of small nations who had thrown off Turkish rule. But what they didn't realize, I think, I don't suppose Woodrow Wilson ever gave it a moment's thought, was there is a fault line. The East and West Roman Empire, Rome, Constantinople, Constantine had fixed what is about now the northern border of Bosnia as the borderline between Rome and Constantinople. So north of that, there are Croats who are Catholics but share a language with the Serbs. There are Slovenes who are Catholics and more like Austrians than anything else. And south of that, there are Serbs who are Orthodox Russian and very Slav, and a whole lot of descendants of forcibly converted Muslims converted by the Turks, and lots of odds and sods like Montenegrins and Macedonians and the like. But they were forced, the boundary was drawn, they were one country and had to make the best of it. And then we had this journey out, and with great respect, although E.P. Thompson wrote brilliantly, if you could stomach his point of view, he wasn't a very good administrator. Journey ended up in a shambolic sort of way 6 days and six nights before we reached our work face. And we were on very slow trains. There were no berths, just seats. And the carriages crowded with Frenchmen, Austrians, and what have you. So it was rather rough. We had long delays, changing trains at Innsbruck and Zagreb. We waited for hours and hours on station platforms. And at Villach, we had to sleep rough the night on the platform. It wasn't even covered, but fortunately the weather was very good. We were finally fielded at this place called Shamak, halfway between Zagreb and Beograd, and put on a lorry and sent about 100-odd miles south to a place called Zenica, which is about, 40 miles north of Sarajevo, and on a few kilometres to the obvious signs of people trying to cut a railway. And we were met by Yugoslavs who, through an interpreter, sort of gave us a briefing. The interpreter described me. He was one of these turnip-faced Slavs who looked like an absolute peasant. But to my astonishment, his English was very fluent. And he did extremely well. It was something incongruous to hear such good English coming out of somebody who looked as though his grandfather had been a serf, you know. Anyway, they said that the Nazis had vandalized the whole of Yugoslavia as they retreated, in especially on railway lines. They'd coupled together four engines with a specially designed plough, which smashed up the sleepers and the line. And they had no martial aid, no help from Stalin's Russia, because Tito had in some way quarreled at that time. They had absolutely no money, no machinery, and no assets. So it would be a question of bare hands, picks, shovels, and wheelbarrows. And then they threw a lot of statistics at us. The new line would be 240 kilometers long. There would be 4 million cubic meters of earth dug out and tamped down where it was needed. 500,000 sleepers, 50,000 wagons of gravel, 5 bridges, 4 tunnels, 37 railway stations, embankments created and land levelled, and so on. They were so keen on statistics that every one of their groups of 50 had a man who did just statistics. Yugoslavs were like that. They would check and count how many wheelbarrows. You had to do a sort of norm of work, which were roughly 1 cubic meter of earth weighing about a ton, dug out, put into a wheelbarrow, taken to somewhere where it was needed, emptied and tamped down. And that the 1 cubic meter was called a norm. And they checked up on every individual and every person to make sure that their norm was being created. And also, we didn't realize it until later that every single student in Yugoslavia, Slovenes, Croatians, Serbians, Macedonians, Montenegrins, Bosnians, the lot, were all doing a stint, roughly 8 weeks, on this during the summer, on this project. And Tito was determined it would be used for national unity, because Yugos, there were jealousies and hatreds, particularly between Serbs and Croats, especially after each had done something nasty to the other. I think the Croats, when the Germans were riding high, did a lot of nasty things to the Serbs, and the Serbs at the end of the war managed to get a lot of Croats mown down in some spot. And oh yes, to help on the analogy that by raising a right arm shouting Heil Hitler, it every time you met anybody all day long, it marginally helped the sense of unity among the Germans. But Tito decreed that we would, every time we met anybody or a work party passed another work party going to or from a work place, we would shout out to each other, Stravo Druge, greetings comrade. Živio Tito, long live Tito. Živela Omladinska Pruga, long live the railway project we're working so hard at. Bratstvo, brotherhood. Jedinstvo, unity. Sloboda Narodu, freedom to the people. And Sloboda is an odd word because it not only means freedom, but it's the Christian name of Milosevic. And also on every lavatory, it means vacant. So, and smrta fascismo. But the two key words were bratstvo, jedinstvo, brotherhood and unity. And they were a harsh punishment for anybody who pushed a Croat point of view rather than a Serb, pushed his own. You had to think in terms of unified Yugoslavia. So with some pretty harsh punishment and lots of suitable greetings and a job to do, it helped the unity of Yugoslavia. They also played a joke on me. They taught me at the end of it all, Bratstvo, Jedinstvo, to shout Jebemti Bulgar. And people, I looked either startled or laughed. And I found out after a short time that what I'd been taught to say was, go and fuck a Bulgarian. We were shown some tents that looked not very different from a refugee camp in Kosovo, and the British in the briefing group were terribly proud of their lavatories. Deep holes, carefully checked and tidied up every day with oil, rags soaked with used engine oil, set alight so that it kept the smell away. And they were sort of said that with a kind of wooden bar to sit on, and the Brits were very proud of that. It was practically the best individual job they'd done. And we were given a meal of black bread and stew. And that was all the entire time on the railway. That's all we did eat. The black bread was terribly sustaining and terribly thick, rather hard, and never went stale, or never got moldy or anything like that. You could keep it a week. It was, I don't know how they made it. Black in colour, and like the, I mean, you wouldn't see anything in Sainsbury's remotely like that kind of bread. Well, they then said we would be in between a Serbian group of 50 and a group of 50 Greeks who were refugees from the recent civil war. And they were accustomed to doing voluntary PT before dawn so that their muscles would be toned up as they reached the workplace at dawn. And we listened to that with some alarm, and we started works next day, arriving in a rather ragged bunch a bit late. And we certainly, none of us had done any voluntary PT either before dawn or any other time. But we staggered up to the workplace and did our best, but we all got blisters on our hands, and we were on our honour, having dug into the workplace, and we were trying to level something. That was in, they didn't give us anything specialised like tunnel working. They did all that, the Serbs did all that themselves. But we hacked into the hillside and took a shovel and shoved it into a wheelbarrow. And it was grueling work, and wheelbarrows was slogging work. And then we were on our honour to take something that tamped down the earth, on our honour not to skimp that, because it would cause immense damage to the railway if we did. But I don't think the British group were very good. I think the Yugoslavs had to put some work in after we'd finished. And
which season was this?
What?
Which season of the year was it?
August. And or might have been late July. The Serbs and Greeks were always on time. Their tools were beautifully cleaned and neatly stacked at the end of the day's work, but ours were just a muddy heap. And they had got some whitewash and carefully applied it so that their camp looked neat, tidy and clean. But all we ever had outside our tents were lines of dirty washing. And they had the minimum number of chaps doing cooking, collecting stores, or renovating lavatories, or various other camp chores. We always had far too many off the workplace doing that kind of thing during the day. And they were very good at singing traditional folk songs and dancing their national dances and organizing discussion groups and amateur theatres and sports on a weekend. One awful day we listened to some very good singing, like Welshmen, and some neatly done traditional dancing, and then somebody shouted out in English, "Now where is the spirit of Britain?" And these unprepossessing blokes that had stacked with me all the way couldn't think of anything to do except the hokey cokey. It left me crawling with embarrassment, and I'm afraid I slunk away. I just couldn't bear it. Even after 52 years, it still gives me a twinge. Then, if only E.P. Thompson had given some thought other than politically correct Marxist doctrines, we could have had just one Scottish piper and a kilt, and we would have dragged up eight people who could just about manage and ate some reel. It would have been made all the difference. We could have just about got away, but the hokey cokey was just the end. So you reckon we're pretty poor relations, blistered hands, sore backs, pathetic at hokey cokey and anything else we did. Right. I once managed a day visit to Sarajevo, and I found it was all Muslim coffee and peasant markets and Turkish minarets, and I managed to buy some chocolates and some slivovitz on the black market. But otherwise, for the duration of the work, I didn't get a day off. once I saw, they called them brigadas, meaning group of 50 Slovenian girls, and they were enchanting. They were marching and singing a haunting folk tune. It was really lovely. They were tanned, fit, not an ounce of superfluous flesh, given the amount of work they'd done, and I all blonde, looking rather alike, and I took them to be the most beautiful girls in the world. Then, after we slogged away and more or less done our job, the Serb and Greek brigades were given an award called a Judanik, meaning they'd, instead of doing 1 cubic meter of earth moved every day per head, they had managed 1 1/3 cubic meters or something like that, and kept it up for 3 weeks. And they were given this is the badge given to individuals who had worked hard. And the Serbs and Greeks either side of us were not only given that, they were given 3 bars, I think, you know, so 4 Judaniks, whereas we got nothing at all. I managed to get one for myself, but I really hadn't done quite that amount of... I think I just about managed a cubic meter a day.
This is a badge with a red star on in 1947,
yes.
And some Cyrillic script.
It says Udonic, meaning shock worker, and Omladinska Pruga. That was the project. Omladinska means youth, Pruga means railway. And at the end of our stint, I forget how many weeks, 5, 6 perhaps, we were given a holiday and sent to Dubrovnik via Beograd. And Beograd was odd. About the only thing you could buy was in the street, there were small fires with a man roasting corn on cob. And those sold quickly enough. People, I think, were quite glad to eat almost anything. And the other thing I remember about Belgrade was every single public lavatory was chock full of feces and newspaper. You couldn't use them. It was terribly difficult to find anywhere where you would go to the lavatory. But apart from that, I haven't much memory of Belgrade. We moved on to a train which went southwest to Dubrovnik, and the country was enchanting. They had the hay stacked in hoy manner, which was new to me. You know, those little things that looked like a scarecrow made of straw. The stacks, instead of putting up haystacks, they put up a whole series of individual hoy manner. I don't know what the Serbo-Croat word for it is. And then we reached, by daylight, I'm pleased to say, we passed Mostar, unfortunately, in the dark. We reached by daylight the limestone cliffs that form the littoral of Yugoslavia with the Adriatic Sea, and we moved very slowly. The train, I think, had to go down a gradient and then change the points and back down another gradient and then go down, and finally to reach where it was going so slowly we could jump off, and there were ripe figs everywhere, we could help ourselves, and